Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. We've got a great turnout, particular thanks to the Koreans. We had a sellout crowd for the education session this morning, so they've set the tone for what will prove to be a pretty lively meeting. We have a very full agenda. We'll start with the usual practice of about 15 minutes in closed session, and we'll move as soon as we're done into the open session. There are a few things that I did want to draw to your attention. First, you may already have seen the advertisement that's gone out informing the world that, regrettably, at the end of this year, we will lose six of our existing members who, you may recall, are already in overtime, having served on the previous council and another 3 years and a seventh year. So they've earned their rest. The timeline is rather fast. I believe the call for nominations is for July 15. That may seem rather too fast, but the problem is to allow for the trustees to evaluate candidates, make the appointments, and enable those people to join us in February. Those appointments really have to be made very early in probably October. So that's the reason for the fast turnaround. The particular emphasis this time around is on emerging markets, investors, and the academic community. Those are sensitivities that I'm taking a liberty here, speaking on behalf of the trustees, but I think those are perspectives that were noted over the last 2 or 3 years as where we're light in terms of representation. However, I would encourage you, the best source of candidates is the network of people who are already involved. You are our best prospects. And not only do we have the six this year, but next year, I'll be more cheerful because it'll include me, there's a much bigger wave of us who will be saying hasta la vista come the end of 13. And so I would urge you to think now in terms of looking around people who you think would make strong contributions to the council, getting them engaged and interested. If it doesn't happen this year, that energy will be well spent in terms of lining up strong candidates for 2013. One of the six, unfortunately, includes Patrice. And that will raise the question of the appointment, perhaps, of another vice chair. I think the trustees have decided that's an important decision, but it's separate from the first order of business, which is to fill the vacancies. And so my understanding is that the trustees will come back to the question of the vice chair probably towards the end of this year. So please do give some thought to and encouraging people to put their names forward. Looking ahead to the fall, what I consider to be the fall anyway, we have the World Standard Setters Conference, which will be held here in London, same week as our next meeting. So I would urge you to try and accommodate your diaries to perhaps attend that session as well. My main reason in mentioning it is that there will be a brief slot on the agenda for the Advisory Council. I'm not sure yet, just I suspect it will be a fairly short time slot to allow us to continue to profile the work of the council. And I see this as part of our communications and outreach to let people know what we're doing and get their suggestions on how they could use the council to maximum benefit. Once I have more information on that, I will post information on the website and seek your suggestions as to how we might make best use of that time. And if you are planning to attend, perhaps to be involved in that particular session. Another thing I wanted to draw to your attention, we'll be coming back, spending quite a bit of time at this meeting, and I think, you know, going forward, due process is going to be one of the most sensitive issues for everyone. So we will be spending time this afternoon discussing proposed changes to the due process handbook. We'll be talking about external involvement. We have David Sidwell with us, who chairs the due process oversight committee. The committee met, I think it was towards the end of April. I was invited to attend that meeting to discuss the council's involvement with the ISB agenda consultation. Unfortunately, I had a more pressing commitment, being a cruise up the Yangtze. So I sent I made a written report, shared a draft with you, albeit on short notice. And the essence of that report was that, in my judgment, I thought the relationship between the council, the ISB, and the trustees was an excellent example of how the consultation process ought to work. We were involved early on. We had lots of time. We spent a lot of time discussing that topic. We had extensive feedback from Sir David and the latter stages Hans as to how the board had considered our views. And I think if you look at the documentation that is reflected in the consultation and in the analysis of comments received, which we'll look at later today, clear evidence that the board took into account our views, didn't always agree, and where they didn't agree, told us so. So I hope that's an accurate reflection of your views, as which I expressed on our behalf, saying that I thought that the process had played well, but said nothing about the particular conclusions or what the leading contenders might be. Those are topics that we will get to later at this meeting, and probably more so at the next meeting in October, as to what the next generation of projects is likely to be. So I will be meeting with the Due Process Oversight Committee when they meet in Washington in July. So once further ideas as to what views they might be interested in, I will put a draft on our website for your consideration so that I don't get out of line. Those are the points that I wanted to raise. Is there anything that members would like to raise in the closed session before we open the discussion to observers? Karen?
Thanks, Paul. Just a plea for earlier delivery of the agenda papers. I had set up the meeting with my colleagues from FEI Canada for last Monday, and unfortunately we had to meet missing some of those agenda papers. So it really would be most helpful if they could come a little earlier.
We seem to have slipped a bit from previous sessions. Is it simply a reflection of workload, or I know we have an unusually large number of external presenters, which I think makes it more difficult to get the papers in, but any, looking down, or Michael, any reaction?
I'd just say it's a combination of factors, but it was, we'd already noted ourselves that we need to get the papers in earlier, so we'll be looking at that for next time.
I'd like to see us introduce sort of a template that just we could put on our website, private website, that simply indicates the papers that we're expecting and, you know, tentative dates as to when we're likely to receive them. I think it just helps the planning process to some extent. I think it gives staff and the presenters an idea of what their targets are. All right. Any other? Alan, did you have something?
Yeah, just something very small. In the admin session tomorrow, we're going to discuss data protection, and there's some changes we've had to implement here because of data protection legislation. And part of that is we'll be asking you to sign a form acknowledging that you understand what we're doing with your private the name and address, etc., the information you provide to us, and just acknowledging that we're making best efforts, etc. So we'll get that form out to you sometime today. It was just prepared on Friday. And then we can discuss it tomorrow at the admin session. So I just wanted to pre-warn you.
Any other matters for the closed session? All right, then we will come back. We'll have a very brief closed session tomorrow afternoon before we adjourn. But at this stage, let's move into open session. Welcome the observers. We have the agenda that's been sent out, plan to stick to it as best we can. The agenda committee has identified as a theme for this meeting, and I think for several meetings in future, the objective of consistent, high-quality financial reporting using IFRS consistency. And we've identified several dimensions to it. One dimension is you can't have consistency in the application if you don't have robust standards that are clear, understandable, and have sufficient guidance. You'll see on our agenda today there are topics that start to touch on that. You can't have effective standards if you don't have an infrastructure that supports those objectives, includes preparers, users, regulators, auditors. And again, you'll see we're at this meeting in the future, we intend to address the question of building the ISB network, several dimensions to that. And then there's the end product, you know, are we getting an acceptable level of consistent interpretation and application in practice? And, so there is an underlying theme connecting several of the agenda items for this meeting, and I think we'll see that going forward. So I want to thank the agenda committee for their efforts in that regard. Encourage you, if you haven't done so, to participate in the agenda setting process. It is an open one. The terms of events that I thought I should note very briefly, I did make a presentation on our behalf to the Due Process Oversight Committee in terms of our involvement with the ISB agenda consultation, expressed our satisfaction in terms of how the process had worked. I attended a meeting of FASAC, which is the Financial Accounting Standards Advisory Council in the U.S. I try to go to one or two of their meetings a year. The most recent one was on the 5th of June. It's interesting to hear Leslie Seidman's report back, and I'm going to be curious to compare it to what Hans and Alan have to say later this morning. Leslie made some very interesting remarks, I thought, in terms of this ongoing question of how much guidance is enough and prospects for convergence. And I'll share some of those observations. I think they're better probably in the context of the specific projects, in terms of her comments, for example, on financial instruments and insurance. But the one of general interest, that, to my ears anyway, was I thought she seemed to be saying that in the U.S. marketplace, you know, the standards have to be responsive to conditions in the U.S. marketplace. And her sense is that, like it or not, the U.S. marketplace is likely to demand more application guidance. Not sure that's the technically correct term, but it's the catch-all term I use. That she seemed to think that in many cases they would need to drill deeper in terms of the amount of material that's included in their authoritative literature than might be the case with the ISB. And I mentioned that because she said it, I thought, in a very dispassionate way. It was not, and perhaps there's a bit of frustration, but it was wasn't a sense of anger. It was just a growing realization that perhaps trying to reach the same level of detail between the two boards might not be a realistic expectation. So I thought that was interesting. I'm sure there'll be an ongoing dialogue, probably not news to your ears. Hans, but it was the first time I had heard her say it perhaps quite so clearly that that might be the way going forward. So it also, to my mind, demonstrated the worth of attending some of these meetings. Sometimes I say, I wonder if it's really worth trekking off. Norwalk isn't the easiest place to get to. But that was an instance where I found, having heard the comments, having had the opportunity to talk to her and to other FASB members, they were all there, I found extremely useful. That's all that I wanted to raise by way of introductory remarks. Charles, first I'll turn to you and then to Patrice if there's anything you'd like to comment on.
Thank you, Paul. At the end of March, I attended, as the Council's representative, two meetings that were held in the same week in Kuala Lumpur. Both meetings, I should note, were extremely well hosted by the Malaysian Accounting Standards Board, who did us proud. The first meeting was the 6th IFRS Regional Forum, which is an Asian Pacific forum. It has a similar composition and atmosphere to this particular council in that that forum brings together a very broad group of stakeholders, which include preparers, users, regulators and standard setters, and a communique at the end of the proceedings was issued, and that communique is on the this council's website, so I won't make any more comment on that. Later in the week was the meeting of the IFAS, or the old National Standards Setters meeting. I'll keep my comments brief because a number of members of this council were there, and quite a number of the issues that were on the timetable there we'll be examining over the next 2 days. For me, the highlight was just to see the amount of development and progress in terms of the various regional bodies, with groups in Africa and South America now beginning to develop some traction, and combining with the Asia Oceania Standard Setters Group and EFRAG, we're starting to get almost a global regional network of standard setters. The low light for me was a presentation from Tom Linsmeyer of FASB that presented probably a less optimistic perspective on where the US is in terms of convergence, etc., than the presentation that this council had at our February meeting from Jim Cracker. Again, the summary of the IFAS paper is accessible through SharePoint, so I won't make any more comments on that. I just want to draw to your attention some of the initiatives of the Financial Reporting Council in Australia, which has oversight not only for accounting standards but also for auditing standards. In terms of the accounting oversight, they've established some interesting task forces looking at issues that are quite relevant and have been on our agenda, one of which is complexity, and the Australian Treasury have very kindly enabled us to distribute to each of you today the final output of that task force examining the issue of complexity. It's a very easy read, and I think it makes some very valid observations, and I commend it to you. The other task force that is relevant to our sort of historical and future agenda is that of integrated reporting, and again, the work of those task forces is easily accessible through reference to the FRC's website. The final point I'll bring to your attention is something that was sent to the FRC in Australia from the chairman of the Australian Crough Group, looking at the financial reporting of the US government. And what everyone thinks of the status of the US government financing, this report is excellent. And I bring it to your attention because, to me, it highlights the way in which quite detailed and complex financial information can be presented, making the maximum use of technology and effectively empowering each user to access and drill down to whatever detail and whatever particular area of focus one has. And the reason I mention it is that I see in many industries that I'm involved with significant structural change is underway, not just this cycle that we're all trying to survive, but there is significant structural change, and I think technology is driving a lot of that, and I can't help but feel that standard setting is going to, and the way in which we present essentially information that is used by people for different purposes is going to be significantly impacted by technology, and this US government website, I think, is a very good example of how that technology can be used to enable different users to access whatever they believe is relevant to them.
Thanks, Charles. And, you know, I think we'll come back. We'll have lots of opportunity to come back to the question of the impact of technology on complexity of financial statements, disclosure overload, and related issues. Patrice, not going to comment on the election results?
Is that exciting?
Life is as it should be in France. All right. Any comments or of a general nature that members would like to raise before we turn it over to Hans for an update? All right. You're on.
Thank you, Paul. I have been in office almost a year now, and I told you before that I had been misled into this chairmanship by the promise that all the big four convergence projects would have been finished by the time I started my function. 1 year on, we are still working hard on all four of the projects, but I must say I am starting to feel that the end is in sight. And I'm also actually quite grateful that the projects were not finished, because this really forced me to immerse myself into really some of the most complex questions of accounting standards. And it was a quite a learning experience, and I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there, I hope. Last week we had a very good meeting, a very good board meeting, since we took really a big hurdle to solve the problem of the leases standard. We reached a converged decision on truly what is more a minor issue, but which had become politically very sensitive, namely expense recognition patterns. And we really struggled with solving this issue, because there was simply no clear theoretical answer. Since leases are unique, they are somewhere in between financing and services, and they combine elements of both. So there was not such an easy answer to this question. And there was also, and still is, massive opposition against the standard, since it will lead to off-balance sheet financing getting on the balance sheet. And wherever interested parties feel that we as standard setters do have some divergence, or we don't feel sure about an issue, the pressure just mounts. The preference of the IASB board was to stick with our original decision, which was to treat lease contracts as a purchase which is financed, and take the front-loading of interest payments for granted. Front-loading, which, by the way, if you have a big portfolio, you don't even see it. But I think we found a very reasonable compromise with the FASB, which was actually based on ideas that had been brought forward by John Smith, who is still a board member, but not much longer. It had been brought to the fore by John Smith in a couple of months ago, which was that you have a dual approach between leases in which more than an insignificant portion of the underlying asset is consumed. As an expedient, leases of property will get a straight line approach, and other than property leases will be accounted for according to the original approach. So the largely, roughly said, equipment leases will get the original approach with front loading of interest payments, and property leases, since usually so little of the underlying asset is being consumed over the time, we are treating more in the neighborhood of a service. Lessor accounting will be symmetrical. The lessor will apply the receivable and residual approach to leases for which the lessee acquires and consumes more than an insignificant portion of the underlying asset. It should, because we are choosing for an expedient, we expect this to be relatively simple to apply. What we also found out during the extensive outreach that we did to reach our final decision was that there, under users, among users, there is simply massive support to put leases on the balance sheet. We talked to 24 users, and out of these 24, 22 told us to go ahead and get the things on the balance sheet. Can be absolutely no doubt about that. And given the fact that we have taken a rather practical approach and that we have already scoped out services, we have scoped out options, we also have scoped out short-term leases, leases under a year, I don't think that in practice this standard should be too burdensome for preparers. To be continued, I think we have taken all the major hurdles this far. Then financial instruments. Impairment is nearly finished. All the major decisions have been taken, and we only have to talk about disclosures and transition requirements. We will have largely aligned exposure drafts ready in the second half of 2012. Largely aligned, not completely aligned, because indeed the FASB is going to give a much more application guidance than we will. And has to do a lot with existing practice in the United States. As far as our limited modifications to IFRS 9, I think we have succeeded in keeping them truly limited. Nevertheless, there are some important changes which will bring us closer to the FESB. Most important, of course, is the inclusion of a third measurement category, fair value through OCI for simple debt investments, that where it's not completely clear whether they will be held to collect contractual cash flows or whether they will be held for sale. This will bring us a lot closer to United States, but not completely converged with the FASB. Here again, the FASB will probably issue a lot more application guidance than we do. We did this, as you know, for convergence sake, and also for the insurance standard, which I will talk about later. But I must say that in the last couple of months, we have been talking to banks who are not so happy about this. Some banks are not so happy about it. They were telling us we could very well live with IFRS 9 as you had decided, but then when we talked about what they expected to be able to do in terms of liquidity management with instruments held to collect, we really think they would have gotten into problems with our standard, that they had a much more lenient interpretation of what we felt was possible with instruments held at amortized cost than they was really the meaning of IFRS 9. So I think this will come in handy for these banks as well. We expect an exposure draft to be ready in the fourth quarter of 2012. 12. Revenue recognition has never been very problematic. There are some issues remaining that we will have to solve. We expect our redeliberations to be completed in 2012. We'll still require us to be extremely disciplined. And we hope that the final standard can be issued early 2013. Then insurance, that is the standard where least convergence is taking place, I'm afraid. It has never been an MOU project. There always have been huge differences in timing. The FSB had only issued a discussion paper. We had already issued an exposure draft. So there were, we had big, and then there was the fact that US GAAP already had an existing standard and we had basically nothing at all. So the differences were just huge. And I have already mentioned to you before that we have realized for some time that we would not be able to end up completely converged, that we would need our own standards. And we have some important differences, such as decisions on locking or unlocking, decisions on having a residual margin or a composite margin, inclusion of a risk margin. So we will have some differences in our exposure drafts. We did, however, also reach quite a few really important converged decisions. And one of the main ones that was just taken was that we decided to present in other comprehensive income changes of the liability as a result of changes in the discount rate. Why did we do that? Well, users and preparers had told us that they really wanted to have presented separately from each other underwriting results and fluctuations of the balance sheet, basically. And we felt that meeting this request was a price we might have to pay for the big prize, which is that we get that we will get the balance sheet measured current. The balance sheet is extremely important to an insurance company and to their investors, and we believe that getting that measured current, that is extremely important. Also given the fact that the income statement of insurance companies is subject to tremendous judgment to begin with, and it will be very hard to get a grip on that. So that's why the balance sheet is so all important in insurance, and we feel that we made an important decision there. I'm also going to say in a speech later on this week that this decision, as a result of this decision, investors cannot just pay attention to net income when analyzing the insurance industry. OCI will contain very tremendous, very important information on the quality of the balance sheet, on duration mismatches, for example. So both have to be looked at. And quite honestly, what I will also say is that investors have better pay close attention to comprehensive income as a whole. I have comments about the future agenda, but we're going to talk about that this afternoon. So this is the progress that we are making on the big four ones. As I said, insurance not completely converged, but at least we as a ISB we are moving forward. We are really motivated to get this standard done. Hopefully we will finish our redeliberations by the end of this year. Then we will have to decide whether we're going to re-expose, and if we re-expose, to what extent. But the big decisions have been made. And even if we don't get completely converged with the United States, as I said, quite a few important decisions we are converged, and the fact that we are going to have a standard is already a very important feat of convergence, because now we have nothing. This as far as the big four projects are concerned. I'm happy to take questions on other issues or on this.
Any comments or questions relating to the report so far?
Morning. Hans, I just want to ask, you've mentioned a lot in terms of the fact that the FASB is going to be giving out a lot more application guidance than we are. I mean, isn't there a bit of a concern that by analogy people are going to start looking to that guidance and applying it in IFRS, which means don't we kind of get back to the stage of, well, why didn't we just issue it?
Yeah, that is always a concern, and we will, I think we will give enough guidance to be able to avert that, but it is always a risk, I agree with you. And yeah, but it's something we cannot stop.
And it's something actually I think we'll come back to in the discussion of the external involvement. You may recall the Tricia O'Malley's paper on IFAS suggests the possibility that at least you might, to the extent there is additional application out and about elsewhere, efforts to try and converge it would be helpful in reducing diversity. So, Judith.
And a quick question from some of my constituents. Given the current timetable for IFRS 9, the Exposure Drafts Quarter 4, finalisation during 2013, are you reviewing the application date at all?
Not at this moment. I think it's still doable, but it's going to be tight. I agree. Sue, did you want to add?
Yeah, just to keep the current mandatory effective date of 1st of January 2015, we know we'd need to have it wrapped up by the 30th of June 2013 to give the 18-month lead time minimum that we try to work toward. So we're mindful of that, and also the other thing we're mindful of is that given that so far the board has said that they want all of the phases of IFRS 9 to be mandatory at the same time, the final impairment model matters and what the lead time would be to apply that. So as part of that process, we'll make sure whether or not 2015 still makes sense. And the other thing, of course, is the insurance contracts project, because the interaction for insurance is also important for insurance companies.
Jerome?
Thank you, and thank you, Hans, for your update. And I think it's good that you, as chairman, you drive all these projects forward and that you show optimism and looking to a bright future. Just two comments from my side.
To an end, not a bright future.
That's the same.
just two comments. And some more general comments. I think for all these standards, we really must make sure that once they get onto the books, that they have been tested sufficiently. And for years, we ask for field testing, for good impact assessments. We have just voted 2 weeks ago in Brussels the consolidation package, positive vote. But there was a strong demand from member states that we must know what these standards will do. And otherwise, we run into really terrible political problems, or ex post, we try to remedy things that we don't want to do. In this case, EFRAG did very useful work to make clear to our member states what the effect from this standard will be. But I think it's crucial for these standards that are in the pipeline that they're well in advance analyzed from an economic point of view and tested. Second point is that, of course, in particular on financial instruments, this all happens on the agenda of the G20 that has asked for mid-2013 to be ready. So I'm happy to note that basically the ISB tries to respect that, and I think that's also important because basically we're already into the second crisis. Thank you.
Do you want to respond to that?
No, of course, I understand these comments. I understand the request for more field testing. We are trying to do as as much as we can. We are, in the future, we're also going to invest much more in the research phase, where we should be able to find out more about the possible effects of a standard before you start with the actual standard setting as well. In terms of economic consequences, that is always very difficult, of course. I think what you can reasonably do very well during the standard setting process is what does this mean operationally for the preparers? How do they have this? Is it feasible for them to change their systems? And if you look, for example, at all the work that we did in terms of impairment, we did involve the banking sector very closely, perhaps even too closely. But at least, we have responded very quickly when they told us we cannot do this because we simply don't have the information. So we try to do that as well as we can. I'm sure we can do even a better job. In terms of economic consequences, very difficult in the United States. The leasing industry has issued a report which basically predicts the end of the world as a result of the leases standard. Enormous loss of jobs. It is quite possible that companies are, in the case that they are mainly motivated by off-balance sheet financing, that they in the future they might choose for another way of financing their equipment or real estate, and that might be detrimental to parts of the leasing industry. It might be good for banks that now get loan applications. And all I can say is that if you get more transparency, you get a better allocation of capital, and probably a better allocation of capital leads to better economics and job creation. But this is all very difficult to predict. It's very difficult to make an economic analysis of that. So more macroeconomic analysis, I think, is very tricky. But we can make, and that's what we're trying to do, we can make economically plausible standards. That's what we're trying to achieve. And we can also pay a lot of attention to how feasible it is for preparers to implement our standards and how costly it is.
Hans, and listening to your report, I mentioned I had a few observations reflecting on what I heard at the FASAC meeting earlier this month, and I think Leslie's assessment of leases would be very consistent with yours, although I'm not sure the late-breaking development on that you referred to had been accomplished by then. My observation, trying to follow that decision, is usually the communications coming out on these things are relatively clear, but I was confused. I saw three different reports that, the way I read them, gave quite different explanations of what the compromise solution was and not a very clear explanation of the basis of it. And so I think it would be important to get that out fairly quickly to not undermine the credibility of the progress that's being made. On the financial instruments, again, I think Leslie's comments were consistent with yours. They see a need to provide more application guidance. She also expressed the view that regarding hedging, although they had not yet decided they would need more application guidance, the FASB was not yet convinced the existing material was sufficient to have enough legs to achieve what they would consider to be an appropriate level of consistent interpretation and application. So if you just put a marker down, that might be another area where the U.S. would find a need to provide more material. Her assessment on the insurance project, though, to my ears, was not as optimistic as yours. In fact, she said that the FASB intend to stand back and rethink from square one what this project means to them, and I thought I heard her say that she does, in her judgment, it's not realistic at this point in time to expect a converged standard.
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
And that's what you said. Yeah. Where that, how that plays out, I guess, remains to be seen. But what I took away from that was that whatever the FASB does to sort out their problems should not be an obstacle to the ISB reaching timely completion of this project. As you said, you know, we need a standard. They have one. The starting point is just quite different.
Well, what Leslie also said at that meeting, or at least what I read in the press, is that given the fact that we are not fully converged, FASB might want to take a step back and decide not to issue a complete new standard, but perhaps patch up the existing one. I don't know what the difference is, by the way, because you need an exposure draft for both. But that was, I think, a bit of a political message. I think that has been also been the fact that the United States has the, or the FASB has the choice to not issue a completely new one, but patch up existing standard. It's such a different point of departure that it has really, I think, made this convergence project difficult. Where, for example, leases we knew, if we don't solve this together, we don't solve it. And in insurance, the point of departures were very different. Sue, I think you, or Alan, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to add something on the leasing communication. We've also been watching the press and we're a bit concerned that there's a bit of miscommunication coming in some of the press coverage at the moment. And so what we're going to do in the next couple of weeks is present a webcast, a joint webcast, where we'll try and summarise what the decisions are and why to make sure that the messaging is clear in the market on that. And I guess on the insurance, what you've said is correct, but I think that following that statement that Leslie made at the FASAC meeting, at the following week's education session on insurance, she clarified some of her statements. And really, I think what she was trying to say was that in a similar way to with IFRS 9 and the Classification and Measurement Project, where even though we're trying to get as common as solutions as possible, ultimately because we'd be coming out with an exposure draft which shows changes to IFRS 9 and the FASB would be coming out with a new model because they don't have a classification and measurement standard for their new model in place yet, the documents could look quite different, even though the results are very similar. And I think similarly for insurance, we'd be going out with a, if we went out with a new document, you'd be able to see what it looked like relative to our previous ED, for example, would probably be what we'd be trying to do, whereas for them, it may well be the case that they'd make changes to their existing literature, so the actual documents could look quite different, even though the decisions would be as similar as we can get them. And so a lot of it's sort of form, as in words on the page, as opposed to substance as well, and that sort of complicates the messaging a little bit, I think.
Well, that is absolutely quite different from what, what she said at FASAC. So to me, that simply suggests getting that message out to prevent me and others from repeating what maybe misinformation would be helpful. So, all right, are we ready to move on from the remaining four? Jerry, could it be insurance?
Well, it could. And just to come back quickly on what Sue said, I think that the way Leslie's comments were taken directly out of the FASAC meeting were reported in ways that may well, based even on briefing at that time of the meeting, were different than the way the public reporting got handled. And it is not clear to me at all that the way in which Sue has described the differences may not be closer to the mark. We've met with FASB. I would say that the interpretation I think that Hans has given is within the range of the ways that we've heard it described to us, more than the idea that we simply were not going to have convergence, because it did leave open the idea that there are significant areas of agreement. And I think it'd be wrong to leave this with the idea that there was misreporting of Leslie's comments right at the time.
All right. Norbert, sorry.
Sorry, I have to come back a little bit on this kind of what the FASB proposed with additional application guidance. Honestly, I'm a little bit concerned from a user perspective if that is not a new trend, saying on the one hand side, on a framework, you agree on convergence, but going more than in details and in the practice, so that we still get a new round of divergence in Brexit, and especially if I see financial instrument, which is always very critical, and it's one of problems still in the financial service industry that you have not the same level playing field. So I'm a little bit concerned, especially from users' perspective, if there is then still comparability, or if that even is going to get more momentum also in additional standards to come. Is there something from the IFRS board to hold that a little bit back, or what can you do from your side?
Well, if you look at the situation 2 years ago, you might think, let's count our blessings, because then the FASB was on full fair value, and we had our approach. It was vastly different. Now at least we have an outcome where we have the same categories, more or less, where we both have a mixed measurement method, where we did not get converged on netting, which I really regret. At least we have disclosures that make it very visible for investors what the true situation is. So I think we achieved a lot in terms of convergence, but we didn't quite get there. It's unfortunate, but this is as much as we could do at this moment. And at a certain point, political decisions have to be made, but we'll hear about that later by the SEC. But at least we got a lot closer than where we were.
But do you see also that there is a danger that this will be a new kind of how to get converged, to get then in more details on application kinds, and then at the end, in practice, you still have divergence?
Well, let's be clear, that is that after these four standards, so after we finish them up, convergence is over as a working method. No matter what decision is being made in the United States, convergence as a method will be done. So there is no danger that this method will become a work method in the future.
Seeing no other cards up. Yes.
Just one question relating to IFRS 9. What is still not entirely clear to us is whether or what the precise impact of these modifications would be on these mixed measurement models. So could it be that the final result now would be that only plain vanilla loans would qualify for amortized cost measurement?
No, it will still be possible for plain vanilla debt instruments to be held at amortized cost.
Sue, you had given us the updated work plan. Any additional comments you wanted to make on that or points to highlight?
I guess the only project to highlight, in addition to the ones that Hans has spoken about already, is probably the projects related to IFRS 10. So we hope to publish before the end of June the clarifications of the transition guidance for IFRS 10. And also, as part of that, the board decided to provide additional relief from providing comparators for IFRS 10, 11, and 12, which should help people that are required to apply it from the 1st of January 2013. In addition to that, we're working on the investment entities project to clarify which entities would be defined as investment entities and therefore would measure their controlled investments at fair value rather than consolidate them. We hope to finalise the deliberations on that at the July meeting and to proceed as quickly as possible to finalise the investment entities document after that, again with a view to the mandatory application date of IFRS 10 of the 1st of January 2013.
Thanks, Sue. All right, seeing no more cards up, we still have a bit of time before coffee break, so can we carry on? And welcome back, Julie. Would you give us an update on what's happening on the U.S. scene?
Sure, thank you. In a nutshell, you're well aware that the staff was charged about 2 years ago by the commissioners with doing quite a bit of work to investigate more about IFRS, various facets. It's embodied in what we call the work plan. So the staff is finished with what they think is they were charged with doing at the time, and as committed is preparing a kind of a report that summarizes those efforts. There's been a couple interim reports along the way, but this one would capture sort of the entire amount of effort and the what the staff saw. And so we are, it's probably a matter of weeks, not months, if you will, until the staff is able to release that report. There's obviously internal processes that go on when such a thing is released, but the work is done, and so we're in the internal processes phase of the effort. That will respond to the request for work. The request for work didn't say and then tell us what to do, we being the commissioners. So I think those two are separate but related. So this is the result of the work, but it isn't necessarily, and therefore, you know, do X or Y or don't do X or Y. That is that's the follow-on bit, but that obviously can't occur until the work is done and reported and that part of the process is finished. And like I said, in a nutshell, we're down to the shorter strokes in finishing that. In essence, that's where things stand in terms of the staff work. I can stop there and see if there's any comments or questions.
Comments? Questions? So we've gone from months to weeks. We won't get into discussion of how many.
They're both
more than one, but less than many.
They're both terms of art, just for the record.
Sorry, Bob, I didn't see your card.
Thank you, Chairman. It's very, very happy to hear that it's weeks, not months. Look forward to the statement that it's days, not weeks. But let me ask you, to the extent you feel comfortable talking about it, the process beyond your issuing the report. As you said, you are not the commission. If the commission decided to act in some way once your report is released, do you think it likely that they would act in a way that would involve then a comment on whatever actions they took?
You mean soliciting
Public
comment? It depends. And the reason I say that is certainly if they're amending regulations, that is a notice and comment due process, so definitely. However, if what they think they can do builds on, like, for example, the policy statement that they issued, which is a different form of document versus going into the undergirders of the regulations and tweaking things, then that may be, you know, maybe different. It'd be a different process, and it's up to, I don't know for sure, but that may engender a different type of you know, feedback versus going in and into the plumbing, if you will, of the regulations. But I think it all depends, you know, on how, what they would like to say and the manner of it, and then that would, the due process obviously would follow.
Any other comments or questions regarding the U.S.? All right, well, we look forward to the days. Then it'll be ours. Makoto.
Sorry to have kept waiting. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And so from now, I would like to update the recent developments surrounding the financial reporting regulation in Japan, especially regarding the application of IFRS consolidation in Japan. So first of my presentation, I would like to give you a very brief history of the movement in accounting standards in Japan. So as you can see from this slide one, the Japanese accounting standards changed drastically in the, especially in the late 1990s. And after 2000, Japan began dealing with IFRS. So on the page two, I'd like to give you the explanation of the Japan's convergence process with IFRS. And in, as you can see from the presentation, in 2005, the ASBJ, Japanese Accounting Standards Body, started its convergence process with IFRS. And also the, in 2007, the ASBJ and ISB agreed with the Tokyo Agreement. And following the Tokyo Agreement, it is determined that eliminates the major difference or provide comparable accounting standards by 2008. And it was also decided to set a target date of end of June 2012 for resolving other issues. And to enhance cooperation to facilitate Japan's greater contribution to the international standard setting process. And through this convergence process in 2008, Japanese GAAP was evaluated as equivalent to IFRS by the European Union. So, next. in addition to the need for continuing convergence between the Japanese GAAP and IFRS, many stakeholders expressed their opinions that Japan needs to consider application of IFRS. And from that viewpoint, the Business Accounting Council advisory body to the Japan FSA had discussed the application of IFRS in Japan and published the opinion on the International Financial Reporting Standards in Japan. This is usually known as the interim report. And this was published in June 2009. And the interim report refers to the areas for consideration in deciding the potential use of IFRS and the future picture of optional and mandatory use of IFRS in Japan. And the main points of the interim reports starts the voluntary application from the end of March 2010. For the consolidated financial statements of certain listed companies whose financial or business activities are conducted internationally. And the second main point is the decision of adoption aimed to be made around 2012 on the decision regarding money application IFRS for listed companies. And if adopting IFRS preparation period should be minimum 3 years. And the interim report shows that before making a decision regarding mandatory use of IFRS, the Japan FSA will consider the achievement of some points shown in the slide four, such as that whether the governance of the IFRS Foundation is improved, and whether IFRS appropriate reflect business practice, and so on. And so, as I mentioned, the interim report says that the voluntary application of IFRS should be started in Japan, and the regulation was revised in December 2009 to start the voluntary application of IFRS in the end of March 2010. So next, I would like to give you an explanation on the changes in circumstances after the publishment of the interim report by using the page 6 to 9. As I already told you, with regard to the application of IFRS in Japan, the interim report was released by the Business Accounting Council in June 2009, and the voluntary application of IFRS had been made possible for the business years ending all after March 2010. However, there had been many changes in the circumstances, both domestically and abroad, since the publication of the interim report. I do not explain all of the, these changes, but for example, that the abroad changes that was one is that the delay of the convergence projects between the ISB and the FASB and the US SEC's work plan and the staff report. And for the domestic change, I presume this is the most influential one for the Japan, but the one is that the outbreak of the earthquake and the tsunami in last year. So considering the, these changes after the publishment of the interim report in 2009, the several issues were clarified about IFRS application in June 2011. They are shown in the slide 10, such as that the mandatory application will not take place from the business year ending March 2015. At the very least. The background of this clarification was that there was a widely spreading view in some, especially in companies, that the mandatory application of IFRS could be introduced for the business year ending March 2015 at the earliest. Therefore, the purpose of this clarification was just to clarify the situation. And the second is that a sufficient time period of 5 to 7 years, not a minimum of 3 years, will be required for preparation if and after mandatory application is decided. And removes the termination date of the treatment towards the use of US GAAP for disclosure purpose in the for the Japanese companies. So the next on slide 11, at the same time with the clarification of the issues shown in slide 10, the Business Accounting Council was called in June 2011 and requested to seek a discussion for the consideration of the application of IFRS in Japan. And for discussion, the council was expected that the discussion pays due attention to the fact that accounting standards are not merely technical issues, but much broader issues highly relevant to the status of Japanese firms closely related to the country's history, business, culture, and natural heritage, as well as related legal systems, including companies' act and the tax system, and the firm's global competitiveness. And the second one is to take account of the views of a wide range of stakeholders. And the third one is at the same time carefully pays close attention to domestic developments and the situation in other countries so that the discussion will be comprehensive and mature. And after, since June 2011, the Business Accounting Council had held 10 meetings in total, and the main topics considered as the Business Accounting Council, there were 11 in total. I do not explain the, all of these 11 topics, but as you can see from the slide 12 and 13, they are very broad and issues. Discussed as the business accounting, such as that a very philosophical one, like the ideal accounting system that contribute to economic activities, and also that they are very practical ones, that Japanese audit firms' readiness for appropriate auditing of IFRS-based financial statements. And at the last meeting held in June 14th, the Business Accounting Council completed these main 11 topics, but the council does not reach any consensus on application of IFRS in Japan. so they will continue their discussion. But at the same time, as a business accounting council, there was a very broad agreement that it is still necessary to continue making efforts to seek global harmonization of accounting standards, taking into account global developments. So in developing IFRS, it is important to proactively contribute to the process and to present Japan's own ideas accurately while paying due consideration to international cooperation. So I hope that considering this consensus and agreement, the Business Accounting Council will continue the discussion. And this is my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Makoto. Ian wants to ask a question. Then my suggestion is, having heard that in response, there's a lot of material covered here. We have ample time, so we'll take a break, and then you're not off the hook, so but you'll have time to relax. Ian?
Makoto, thanks for that. The very broad background and explanation. There's just one point. Last week there was a press release from Professor Suzuki, who's done a study of, he said, 1,000 people he interviewed, or in a quite extensive study on IFRS in Japan. And I've only read the press release, not his report, so I've got to be cautious. But the two things that that struck me that he said is, one is that fair value accounting is not suitable to Japanese history and business culture, which were the terms you used there. And secondly, that the FSA backed his conclusions. Could you comment on that press release?
To precisely speaking, Dr. Thomas Suzuki's report was published on the website of the FSA, and his report was conducted to have a research on the influences on the application of IFRS in Japan, considering the through the various kinds of interviews with the stakeholders in Japan. But I can say that there is no fact that the Japan FSA published its report on the website, but does not adopt that report and do not determine any kind of policies in line with that report. So discussion will continue.
Thanks for that, Makoto. All right, why don't we take a 15-minute break, and we will certainly have ample time afterwards to reflect on Makoto's report and come back on anything that Julie may have raised. Thank you.